Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Plastic was the wave of the future in the 1950s. In the last 70 years, it has transformed the way we live. It's cheap, easy to manufacture, flexible, and maybe most importantly, we treat it like it's disposable. Now, plastic trash has become a global crisis. Last year, National Geographic launched Planet or Plastic, a multi-year effort to raise awareness about the crisis we've created and to inspire change. This hour, I'll talk to two lead researchers for National Geographic's Source to See Plastics initiative. Jenna Jambeck is an environmental engineer and associate professor in the College of Engineering at the University of Georgia. She is with us on the line from Georgia today. Hello, Jenna.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And Heather Caldaway is a marine biologist and a 2018 National Geographic Fellow supporting National Geographic's Ocean Plastics Initiative. She's in London right now at the airport, but has taken time to talk with us. Hello, Heather.
Hello, and it's a good afternoon from me.
Well, thank you for being here. And Jenna, I want to start with you, and I want to start by trying to get a handle on the enormity of this problem. And you've done some tremendous work researching and quantifying our trash problem. So let's talk about some of the statistics that you and other researchers have been able to come up with. I mean, you've taken a look at all of the plastic that we've created ever, right?
Ever created, yeah. As of 2017, we have created 8.3 billion metric tons of plastic. And, you know, it's sort of an incomprehensible number. And even when we turn it into something that you might be able to imagine, like 80 million blue whales or 1 billion elephants, it's still a hard number to comprehend. And so that's a lot of plastic that we've made in this world to utilize.
Right. And in a very short period of time. And it's important to note that the vast majority of that plastic is still with us, right?
Yes, it is. And also a large portion has become waste that we've had to manage. And I think that's the key here. So 6.3 billion metric tons of that, because a lot of it is used for packaging and single-use items and enters the waste stream quickly, we've had to manage that waste. And we've only recycled 9% of that, so not even 10% recycled. And the only part that's really disappeared would be the portion that's been incinerated, which has only been 12%. So that leaves 79% of that waste. Either we've had to manage it in our landfills or it's somewhere on our land or in the ocean.
So we've been seeing a lot of research about plastics in the ocean. National Geographic has been at the forefront of that, of course. So you've also been researching how much plastic waste winds up, is not just in the ocean right now, but winds up in the oceans each year. How much plastic are we sending to our oceans every year?
So we made an estimate based upon the waste that we all generate every day on land, and then that of it that gets mismanaged, and then from that a portion gets washed or blown into the ocean, and that number is 8 million metric tons. So this one we can get a little bit more of a handle on imagining when we turn that to a volume. It's about a dump truck of plastic every minute going into the ocean every year.
You've also described it as if there were plastic grocery bags filled with trash, we could line every coastline of the world, right?
Yes, there would be. So if we stand hand to hand covering the coastline of the entire world, we'd each have in front of us 5 grocery bags of plastic. And that's what's going in every year.
Mm-hmm. And all right, that's disgusting. But let's talk about some of the problems that it has caused. I mean, what is the effect of all of this plastic in our oceans?
So, you know, we see impacts to ecosystems. We see impacts to animals. And Heather could probably, you know, is the one probably to talk about this. So I'm gonna punt to Heather because she's the one that sees it, the impacts in the ocean.
Yeah, Heather.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're obviously the plastic has to go somewhere. And I think we have a sense, particularly where we do have waste disposal systems and, you know, the recycling van or the trash truck comes every week and takes it away. But where is that away? And some of that is obviously going into landfill. Some of it is ending up in the ocean. And there it's just accumulating. And having been a marine biologist and working all around the world, plastic has become, unfortunately, an increasing part of what I see every day and everywhere I go and every part of the ocean. And that's inevitably having more and more of and more impact on the wildlife that lives in the ocean and what inspired me to become a marine biologist in the first place. And unfortunately, a recent study from a colleague of mine at the University of Exeter found that every single turtle that she'd looked at and a number of dolphins were finding plastic in their stomachs. And we are finding animals entangled, we're finding them choking, we're finding them starving to death because they've eaten plastic and filled their guts to the point that they can't then take on food and digest it and live a healthy life. We're seeing plastic in every part of the food chain. So the tiniest plankton right at the bottom of the food chain, we're now finding microscopic pieces of plastic inside those tiny creatures. And those are the creatures that are eaten by the bigger creatures right up to the giants of the ocean, the whales. So we're seeing, you know, seabirds being particularly impacted. And it's really quite worrying. And so what we do need to do and what the Planet or Plastic Initiative is all about is not the sort of doom and gloom and it's let's fix this. And that's something that involves everybody, and every single person listening to the show can make a difference starting today. And what's so exciting about having the opportunity to talk about it and share our research is also that's a call to action. And because these items are everyday items that we use, we all use plastic. Sometimes we think about it, sometimes we don't. But we can make a huge difference just by relatively small switches. And starting them today will help not just the oceans, but the rivers, our streets, our parks, all of the wonderful environment in which we live, and keep the planet beautiful versus a plastic planet.
Well, and Jenna, Heather's talking about single-use plastics. Let's talk about how much of the plastic that we use is designed to be thrown away after a single use, after seconds in contact with a human, really.
Right. Yeah, so we produce over 330 million metric tons of plastic every year, and about 40% of that is estimated to be in packaging and those kind of single-use materials. And so you're right, those enter our waste stream immediately.
Mm-hmm. And I know, Jenna, you grew up in Minnesota. Here we are in landlocked Iowa. And I think, you know, we see these pictures of ocean plastic. We see these pictures of the creatures that Heather was talking about in terrible distress. But it feels pretty far away. So why do we need to be talking about this in Iowa?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great question, and it does seem, you know, sort of far away for people. But if you think about the rivers connecting, especially inland, and, you know, where I grew up in Minnesota, I actually grew up on a river, the Snake River, that connected to the St. Croix, which I knew connected to the Mississippi. And so ultimately, you know, there was this connection to the ocean. But it's not just the rivers, the watersheds that then feed those rivers. So really, every point inland is a part of a watershed that eventually feeds a river that eventually feeds to the ocean. And so it does make a difference for our oceans, even inland. But even your just own backyard in terms of plastic pollution, having this material on the ground, littering our environment, you know, there's impact to land animals as well. And so I think, you know, for us, it doesn't just, you know, we have this ultimate sort of impact to the ocean as the ultimate sink on our planet, but at the same time, there's impacts all around us from this material being in our environment.
Well, and Heather, you were talking about these microscopic bits of plastic. And so we see the trash, we see those stunning pictures, but we don't see the microplastics. Tell me how big a problem that is, these plastics that have been in the ocean and in the environment and have broken down.
That's right. So the large pieces of plastic over time from the combination of sun, wind, and wave action when they get into the ocean are breaking down into smaller and smaller pieces. And that's, from the wildlife point of view, is plastic that can be ingested. But it also means that plastic starts flowing everywhere. So I was just listening to your lovely weather forecast at the beginning of your show, and it sounds a bit chilly at the moment, but for you. But the obviously, if you have the weather systems of the world are driven by the ocean, every other breath that we take is thanks to oxygen generated by plants in the ocean, the phytoplankton. And so the ocean is really influencing the weather systems of Iowa as much as they are in many other parts of the world. And when that snow melts, it's going to have fragments of plastic in it, and that's going to flow into the rivers and gradually make its way slowly but surely into the sea. And because these plastic particles and items of plastic last hundreds, if not thousands of years, they are basically moving around our planet and accumulating. And that's why it's so important that we need to capture the plastic. Well, firstly, reduce the amount of plastic we use, particularly in ways that are sort of single use and there are viable alternatives. But secondly, to stop it getting into our water systems and then ending up in the ocean, at which point it becomes really, really challenging to collect and remove.
Well, and Jenny, you were talking about how all the water flows to the sea, but we also have large bodies of inland water. I mean, the Great Lakes, of course, in the Midwest. I mean, are we also seeing this kind of impact on our inland water?
Yes. So actually, the Great Lakes are a part of our U.S. Federal Marine Debris Program. And there have been studies, especially on microplastics within the Great Lakes. We also know the Great Lakes are used as drinking water sources. But yes, and the Great Lakes actually played an important role in the eventual ban of microbeads within the U.S. So microbeads are small, round pieces of plastic about the size of like the tip of a pen that were in cleansing products and, you know, for exfoliant. And so they actually have now been banned in the U.S. And part of that was from taking samples within the Great Lakes and finding the microbeads. We also find microfibers. And so those come off of synthetic clothing or synthetic textiles that tend to shed some of these fibers. And those are also found in, you know, what we say are aquatic systems.
Right.
So
we're going to have to take
a
short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about our global plastic trash crisis this hour. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about our global plastic trash crisis. National Geographic launched their initiative, Planet or Plastic, just about a year ago. It's a multi-year effort to raise awareness about the crisis we've created and also to inspire change and to let us know what's working. With me this hour are two lead researchers for National Geographic's Source to See Plastics initiative. Jenna Jambeck is an environmental engineer and associate professor in the College of Engineering at the University of Georgia. And also Heather Coldaway is a marine biologist and a 2018 National Geographic Fellow supporting the National Geographic Ocean Plastics Initiative. We've been talking about the enormity of this problem, really setting the stage. And now I want to focus on some of the things that are being done and that we can do and where we are seeing action each one of us can take. But Heather, I want to ask you first, do you feel like people are really beginning to grasp this problem, that public awareness is growing?
Yes, absolutely. And we're seeing that globally, and we're seeing that driving a huge amount of change. And there's been a phenomenal number of really exciting grassroots initiatives, because it is something that everybody can act on from today. It is changes that people can make. Some are easy, some are harder. So whether it's changing from disposable plastic bags to a reusable bag, or saying no to straws, or if you need one, using a paper straw or a metal straw, those very simple switches. Moving away from single-use plastic water bottles is something that we've been really championing in the UK, where we have very healthy drinking water from the tap. And every single adult in the UK, and it's a similar figure in the United States, uses between 175 and 200 single-use plastic water bottles every year. So that means if you switch to a refillable bottle very quickly, you make a change. You know, you've reduced the number in the system by 200 just yourself. And if you start making that change across your family or your friends or in your workplace, that's a really big cumulative number. And so we're seeing that kind of reduction in the use of plastic as being a really positive step and something that many communities and individuals around the world are engaging in.
It's so interesting because, of course, for a long time, really driven by businesses, we found ourselves being pushed toward those plastic bottles full of water. It was difficult to find places to refill your water bottle, and it wasn't encouraged. So obviously now we're trying to go back in the other direction. And that's one of the projects you've been really involved with in London, the One Less Bottle Project. So what can a city do? What can a municipality do that really makes a difference and makes it easier for people to refill those bottles of water?
Well, the One Less Project is all about looking at that system. So as you said at the beginning, this is a relatively recent thing. Just in the 60s, plastic really became widespread as a single-use item. So we're talking about a behavior that got very rapidly adopted, but one that we can also look at reversing. But we need to understand the system and what those barriers to change are. So some of the barriers are around, as you mentioned, infrastructure. So where do you fill up your refillable bottle, particularly if you're traveling around a big city like London? And so we've been working with the Mayor of London and a water fountain manufacturer to install fountains in really accessible places. So community centres, parks, major visitor attractions and transport hubs, so stations and undergrounds and so on. And airports like Heathrow, where I'm currently sitting. We've also been looking at behaviour. So it turns out that British people are very reluctant to walk into a cafe or a shop and ask to have their bottle refilled. We're just a bit nervous and anxious about that. So we've been trying to break down that system by putting refill signs on those shops to encourage people to feel comfortable to go in and ask to have their bottle refilled. And then we've been working with designers around new materials and approaches that address things that people might have concerns about, like what does water taste like? Is it the right temperature? Is the bottle easy to carry? Is it noisy to drink out of? And all of these things we've been finding out that might be things that will stop people moving from a plastic-dependent disposable system to one that's refill. But what we're finding is that connection to the stories of that people have seen around wildlife to having a cleaner and healthier planet in which to live is something that is very motivational and is something that people can do and actually save money doing as well. So there's many wins for both people and the planet by taking the right choice and switching to a refill system.
Yeah, you mentioned cost savings on an individual basis. That is a great incentive. Have you had any pushback from businesses that don't want to lose those profits? Because obviously selling people bottled water is pretty profitable for a lot of businesses.
That's very, very true. And I think we are seeing a lot of businesses now coming on board to change, whether that's looking at better recapturing for recycling, moving towards more recycled content, or reducing the amount of plastic in their products, or designing for a more circular economy, so one where we are capturing the plastic and reusing that back as a bottle so it goes round and round in the system rather than ever ending up as waste that litters our streets, our waterways and the ocean. So businesses are certainly becoming more and more engaged and responsible around this issue, and that's been one of the exciting steps forward in a very short period of time. So we've seen some very major commitments from leading brands about making change, and that's a really positive step. What this problem of this global nature involves is everybody getting on board, and I think what's so interesting is it's something that everyone wants to solve. I haven't yet met anybody who enjoys seeing plastic on the beaches or on the streets or in the waterways or seeing, and so it becomes a very uniting challenge and something that everybody from all walks of life can really be a part of that solution.
We're talking about our global plastic trash crisis this hour. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions, your observations at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Heather Coldaway, a marine biologist and a 2018 National Geographic Fellow supporting National Geographic's Ocean Plastics Initiative. Also with us, Jenna Jambeck, an environmental engineer and associate professor in the College of Engineering at the University of Georgia. And Jenna, Heather brought up the phrase circular economy. You know, we're talking about recycling and reusing plastics. We also have a question from one of our listeners. How much of the plastic we put in the recycling bin is actually recycled? And I think that's a big question for a lot of people. Here we are diligently, you know, rinsing out our yogurt cups. How much actually gets recycled?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's a kind of a complex question right now because we've had a major shift in the global recycling distribution. And so what we had happen as of last year, we published a paper and compiled 28 years of import and export data of plastic meant for recycling. So the U.S. and globally, folks were shipping about 45% of plastic meant for recycling to China. And China was taking this material and doing what we call a secondary sort and then recycling what they could of this material. And China stopped taking this as of last year. And what this has sort of had is some cascade impacts, both economic and logistic, as you can imagine, around the world. We predicted there'd be about 111 million metric tons of plastic basically sitting in people's shorelines because China was not taking this material. So that question being, right now, communities are really having trouble getting material recycled because domestically we didn't have some of that infrastructure. So I'd like to say, you know, everything is getting recycled that you put in the recycle bin right now. There's a bit of a nuance to that in that some communities are not able to recycle everything and they're communicating to citizens on what they maybe can or can't put in their recycle bin. But I have to say that this has been a sort of a wake-up call, I think, upstream, thinking about how we design our products and what materials we choose need to be thoughtful in designing things for recycling and for having this value. We're not going to ever get to a circular economy if we're just not thinking about this when we design our packaging and products in the first place. And in some ways, can we even take away this packaging? So when you all were talking about the plastic bottles and alternatives, there's now cups that are RFID enabled so you can go to refill stations yourself and do things like that. And companies are looking at those alternatives as well. Can we get the product to people without even producing waste in the first place?
Well, and I think for so many of us, that green box or, you know, whatever color your recycling bin is, has been a way to engage in denial. If I'm throwing my plastic in that bin, I don't feel so bad about using it. I mean, do we need to think a lot harder about what we're using, even if we have access to a bin?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. You're like, well, I can just recycle this, and so it's okay to use. But in the case of this, because what ends up in our environment is basically a leakage component, a percent of what we use. It's actually better, and it takes less energy and effort than in terms of not producing that waste in the first place. It's better for our environment to not have that waste to manage at all. So reduction is a better strategy than the recycling, but recycling will remain a component of this, there's no doubt.
Returning to some of the statistics that we were talking about earlier, there are, when we look at where the plastic is coming from, there are 10 rivers in the world that the majority of the plastic that's winding up in the oceans is coming from. 8 of those rivers are in Asia. So again, let's return to this question of so much of the problem is far away. So we can talk about our own personal recycling, but then when there are economies across the planet that are producing so much plastic and it's winding up in the oceans and it's affecting all of us, what can we do about that? And I don't know which one of you wants to tackle that question first. I mean,
I think we might start with the science, and one of the elements that with National Geographic that Jenna and I are really pulling together is the accurate facts to make sure it's informed. So that statistic about most of the plastic in the ocean is actually most of the plastic coming from rivers, which is not all of it.
Okay.
So we're looking at about 18% of all plastic coming from rivers in the ocean. And of that, a large percentage, which is under debate and poorly researched at present, so it's a real gap in knowledge, comes from a smaller number of rivers between 10 and 20. And that's been a priority. So our source to sea work is really about understanding that by collecting actual data rather than looking at extrapolation from waste data and population data. We really want to understand what's happening on the ground and collect actual data that transforms the science. And a lot of the changes that you've heard about, we've been talking about the microbeads example, some of the changes in recycling have been informed by research. So we're absolutely passionate about evidence-based, getting that data as quickly as possible that can inform change, whether that's at an individual level, a business level, or a policy level. There is a significant amount of plastic, and Jenna can give, you know, we've talked through the stats already, that's coming from all parts of the world. We obviously are talking between the US and the UK about developed country context. It's more challenging where there's no waste management infrastructure or recycling system at all. And I've been working in the Philippines for 20 years. So that's, we're looking at a very different situation there and looking to, at ways to fix that. But it doesn't mean that we can say it's not our problem here. In fact, our consumption of plastic is far higher in the West than it is in other parts of the world. So we consume more, but we've got better waste management. But we have a huge responsibility, and we also have the science, the technology, the innovation, and the economy that can motivate a change system and mobilize that as well.
Yeah. Jenna, do you want to add anything to that?
I think that was great. I mean, part of the work that we're doing, and Heather said this, but I'll just reiterate, the biggest gap in this research was how much waste is actually getting into the ocean, and we know rivers are one conduit, and that this work that we're doing, this source to sea work, and it's so great for Heather and I to be able to work together on land and then sea based to connect those two and really collect the actual data that we need to make these estimates better. And then I'll also reiterate that in our part of the world, so we're consuming more plastic. That means our waste is higher. We produce 2 to 3 times the amount of waste per person than folks in those other countries. So what they have is a situation where their economy has grown quickly, they have high population densities, and then the infrastructure is lagging. So we can do things like help support efforts to be able to get infrastructure in those areas, and that's also part of some of the work that Heather and I do, you know, around the world. And so, we can make a difference, and especially for us, it's the reduction side.
I want to get to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Larry's on the line in Ottumwa. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Very good topic. My question is, I've traveled extensively. I've been to the Philippines. I've been to the Great Barrier Reef. I've been to Galapagos. We have several companies right here in Iowa that build and develop soybean-based plastics that are biodegradable. So why are we not using biodegradable plastics that over a period of time will return to nature and not contaminate the ocean? I understand the people in the Philippines and Papua New Guinea and some of those areas. And in their lifestyle, they lived in an area where their trash would pile outside, or it would go into a compost situation. And over a period of time, it would return back to fertilizer. Well, now with plastic, that simply doesn't happen. That plastic ends up going into the streams and into the rivers, which are basically their sewer systems.
Well, Larry, I think we get the point about biodegradable plastics, and so I really want to ask Jenna that question before we run out of time here. So why aren't we using more biodegradable plastics, Jenna?
Yep, that's a great point, Larry, and you're exactly right that people didn't know that plastic wouldn't biodegrade because all the materials they used to use did that. So right now it's a matter of meeting that demand and developing. There are biodegradables. One of them is PHA as well, and so you need the organic substrate. And I think you will see those on the market very quickly, but you're not going to be able to have enough of those to meet all of the demand. So that's been a big part of this. And there's also nuances to biodegradability. There's compostability and other situations where we've seen some greenwashing in oxo-degradable, which really just makes the plastic fragment. So unfortunately, this world is a little fraught with some of those issues, but truly biodegradable polymers are about to be on the market.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about our global plastic trash crisis this hour, and we'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Jenna Jambeck, environmental engineer and associate professor in the College of Engineering at the University of Georgia, and Heather Coldaway, a marine biologist and a 2018 National Geographic Fellow, supporting National Geographic's Ocean Plastics Initiative. They are part of National Geographic's project Planet or Plastic. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about our global plastic trash crisis. And with me this hour, I have two lead researchers for National Geographic's Source to Sea Plastics Initiative. Jenna Jambeck is here, an environmental engineer, and Heather Coldaway, a marine biologist. You are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Jenna, I want to return just briefly to the conversation about biodegradable plastics. And we hear quite a bit about plastics that are created from non-petroleum sources. But just because a plastic is created from a source that is not petroleum, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's biodegradable, right?
That's correct. Yep, you can make traditional polymers from non-fossil-based feedstocks. You really just need, in some cases, organic materials. And so there are plant-based plastics that don't biodegrade. They're called bioplastics, and it gets very confusing, but you're correct.
Okay, so just because something is a bioplastic doesn't mean you're in the clear.
Yeah, in terms of biodegradability, that's right. Yep.
All right. I want to talk about the economic ramifications of plastics. We were talking about how consumption in the United States and other developed countries is so very high. But a lot of the places in the world where we see this plastic wash up on the beaches have serious economic problems. And there are a number of different initiatives that I've read about through National Geographic that are trying to create economic incentives for people to help deal with that plastic trash. And Heather, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the Networks project that I know that you've been involved with, which is creating some economic incentives, right?
That's right. Yes, in the Philippines, some of the poorest people are in the fishing community very dependent on catching fish, and unfortunately, those are declining. So that means you need more nets to catch fewer fish, and nets are made of plastic, and those nets last for over 600 plus years once they're used. And there's been no system for managing that waste. So when the islands I visit and have been working in for so many years, and the communities I work in are turning into islands of plastic, so piles and piles of nets that often are staying in the ocean and catching fish that nobody benefits from. But that plastic is actually a very high-grade nylon 6. So if you think about the molding that's inside your car, that's nylon 6. It's a very high-performance, high-grade nylon. And so we've come up with a really innovative model that solves the waste problem, solves the economic challenges that many poor communities face, and has set up a global supply chain. So we actually incentivize communities to collect those discarded fishing nets. We've developed a system of baling those nets and exporting them to by sea to Slovenia, where they're made into Econil yarn, which is then goes on to make carpet tiles by Interface, which is the leading carpet tile manufacturer in the world and is actually based in the United States. And so there's a system that you wouldn't think of, but has actually really solved the problem by finding a way, a mechanism of removing those nets. And we found that for those communities, that cleaning up their place and having a healthier environment around them is a really big motivator for keeping feeding that supply chain. And already through that project and that proof of concept, we've collected enough nets that would, if they were still there, would go around the world over five times as a functional fishing net. And we're now replicating that into Cameroon in West Africa and also in Indonesia. So we found something that works as a business model, that works for people, for the environment, and is economically viable. So it becomes a sustainable mechanism rather than just a feel-good cleanup project.
Absolutely. And I think this sounds like the perfect opportunity to introduce the new Ocean Plastic Innovation Challenge. I mean, clearly there are a lot of really innovative ideas out there, both about harnessing human power, but also harnessing science to really make a difference in this. Jenna, do you want us to tell us a little bit about the Ocean Plastic Innovation Challenge?
Yeah, sure. This is really cool. This is a great challenge that Nat Geo is putting on, and it means that anyone in the world can propose solutions to this issue. So there's three strategic areas that they're seeking solutions, and they're in design. So, you know, we were kind of talking about alternative materials, so redesigning some of the packaging that we need and designing alternatives to single-use plastics. There's also a category on circular economy. So thinking about opportunities for industries to kind of address this issue all the way up sort of the plastic value chain. And this really gets to, can we deliver the products without producing the waste in the first place? And then there's a third category on data visualization. And this is something that we think about in science in terms of communication. Like, how can we really sort of get people to understand this issue through great visualizations, and this is something that National Geographic is really excels at, but it's great to sort of crowdsource this from people around the world to come up with ideas.
Yeah, as you were saying, some of these problems are too big to get a grasp on.
Right. Yeah, I mean, try to envision this 8.3, you know, billion metric tons. How can we think about what that really means? And then I think also people really to understand the impact they can have, because when you think about these individual choices, I think many times this feels very overwhelming. And so another way I think Nat Geo is doing that is through the pledge campaign. And if you go to that site, when you commit to making a change in terms of having a reusable water bottle, it will help you count the amount of bottles that you're not using, so that you've displaced and you know, won't be entering our environment. And so I think that is another way that we need to be able to visualize and know that we're having an impact with these choices, because there's no doubt our research shows, taken collectively, that they do have make a difference.
Let's go back to the phones. John is on the line in Lost Nation. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi, Charity. I just want to thank you for having this program, which you have several of this nature, that I'm glad you care about our planet.
Well, thanks for calling, John. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I want to just want to tell you a little something that I experience I had that I know about. And I used to be live in Hawaii, and when I did, I had a friend who got a job as a carpenter on a cruise ship. And it was to remodel the cruise ship. And what happened is the cruise ship left Hawaii, came to the mainland here, and returned. And on the way, everything that was taken up to be replaced, including carpet, which was substantial, was thrown right over the side. And so that happened that time, and I'm sure it happens every time. And that's just with cruise ships, you know. And so these ships must, I don't know if there's any oversight or policing of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, John. Jenna, is that something you'd like to tackle?
Sure. So there is, in terms of international regulations, so there's something called MARPOL, and in that international agreement, there's an Annex 5 that bans plastic being put into the ocean, disposable plastic, anything, any plastic discharge, basically. And so, yes, these rules exist. I know you asked about policing. For us, within sort of there's like a 3-mile exclusive economic zone for countries, and so your own sort of Coast Guard and folks would be in that for every single country. They have those zones. Certainly in the open ocean, that's harder to police for this and other things that happen in the open ocean. And so certainly there are challenges, but there are ways that this is set up to record how many things go on boats and come back. But certainly in terms of science, we're trying to get a handle on this number as well as how much plastic ends up in the ocean from our maritime activities.
Well, John, thanks a lot for your call. Yeah, Heather.
And we're starting to see some more responsible pioneering businesses, including shipping and cruise ships, who are actually really starting to think about this and how to manage and particularly reduce waste and the thinking about what materials that they use. So we really need some ambition from business so it's not all about control and policing, but actually changing the way that we do things that's much less disposable and has much lower impact.
Let's talk about individual impact, things that we can do. Heather, you brought up a couple of things earlier, the opportunity to take a pledge on the National Geographic site, a number of different pledges. But, I mean, each day, each one of us comes into contact with all kinds of different plastics, and it can be very difficult to cut down on those single-use plastics. They seem to be everywhere. What can an individual do that you feel makes the most difference? Heather?
Start.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think make a start. It can be overwhelming if you just look around your house or your office and you can see that plastic's everywhere and you think about how you have your lunch or your dinner or how you shop in the supermarket or wherever you shop. So start by making some changes. And that's where the pledge approach is really good, because firstly, it gives you lots of different ways that you can do things. So switches that you can make and makes it as easy as possible for you. And just get underway. And what you find is as you do that, you become more and more aware and that you can then make more and more changes. Some are harder than others, but the other thing is also just trying and recognizing that you won't be perfect straight away. But every single piece of plastic we take out of the system is really making a difference. So, if I'm thinking of all the people listening to this program, if everybody just took one piece or made one change, we're talking about a phenomenal impact just coming from Iowa.
Yeah. Jenna, what do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And what I would add from my end, we think about all the changes we can make along sort of this whole value chain. And one of them is also last chance capture, we call it. So if you do see any mismanaged waste, which is basically litter in our environment, you can also help by picking that up. It's something that I did along the rural road that I grew up on with my mom my entire childhood. And now we have a mobile app called Marine Debris Tracker, but don't worry, you can use it inland just as well, but it was sponsored by the NOAA Marine Debris Program. But it's one of the tools, and we're implementing a lot of technology in terms of our data collection tools in Source to See. And so this is one of the tools we're using to collect data. And so this is if you do pick up any litter, and this can be opportunistic, or you can go to an organized cleanup, you can tell us and sort of log the data through this mobile app. And it enters a huge global database that we have, and that's been over 1.5 million items. And we're starting to see sort of a global picture of what is ending up in the environment. And locally, you have access to your data, and you have access to the global data set. It's an open data set. But you can find yourself, like, what is ending up here and why, and what are some local solutions that we could maybe implement to see this not entering? Do we just need to not use these items? Do they need a better management system? Can we, what are the alternatives here? And so I think it's great to be able to have this data to then inform upstream solutions.
You on National Geographic's website are tracking some of the big changes that people in different communities around the world are doing. It's a running list of action on plastic pollution. And it's really heartening to read the list. It gives me a lot of hope. But Heather, you were talking earlier about businesses in London embracing the idea that people could refill their water bottles. And here in our capitalist society, for the most part, if we're going to buy it, then people are going to sell it to us. Do we need to try to affect more change with businesses than maybe even on the personal level?
Absolutely. And I think we are seeing a lot of businesses making change. One of the things that we've been doing is working with a range of different organizations across London and looking at how they can change, and also making sure that they can come up with a viable economic model. So we worked, for example, with London Zoo, and they basically stopped selling water in plastic bottles and provided fountains and sold branded refillable bottles in the shop. And actually, over time, the economic income from the alternatives that they provided was actually more than they made from selling water in plastic bottles. So there was a good example of where a combination of switching the system, of making of how it was marketed and communicated, really worked. We're also working with sporting institutions. So Lord's Cricket Ground, a very famous sport in England, obviously, and well in many parts of the world, they actually started by switching from talking to us around water. But since then, they've actually removed all single-use plastic from their sporting events. So, they have tens of thousands of people who go to watch cricket. We're also doing the same with soccer grounds, rugby grounds, Wimbledon tennis, and so on. And all of those places, it's about looking at what changes they need to make and how they still keep the people who come to those sporting events happy and hydrated. But it is a case of those businesses and those organizations setting some ambition, recognizing the problem, and being a key part of the solution. But there is also a policy element to that as well. So in the UK, they introduced a 5p, which is similar to 5 cents, tax across the country on plastic bags in shops. That's reduced plastic bag use by 80% in a year. So sometimes those policy changes can really, really help make that difference.
We only have about a minute left. In both of your work, you see really the worst of what's going on our planet. And I want from each one of you, and Heather, seeing so many problems, so many marine animals dying, what gives you hope? What keeps you going?
Seeing all those solutions, seeing amazing people wherever I go, absolutely passionate about making a difference, and they're innovators from all walks of life. From kids in schools through to groups, women's groups, to many other people making huge change very quickly.
Heather Coldaway, thank you so much for talking with me today. And Jenna, how about you? What keeps you hopeful?
I would say the people as well. I do see changes happening, and I see sort of that spreading. And I'd have to say, as you try to make these one change, even just starting with your one change or various changes in your life, and you find it challenging, ask maybe why. Why is this challenging, and how could this system be changed so that this was easier? And then you could maybe advocate for that in your community. And so I really think there's opportunity for that. And just the people that I meet around the world who, when they hear about this issue, they want to help, they want to make a difference. And it means I think we truly are going to be able to do that together.
Well, Jenna Jambeck, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Jenna Jambeck and Heather Coldaway, they are lead researchers for National Geographic's Source to See Plastics Initiative. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.